Our guest, Peter Gammons, Hall of Famer, Major League Baseball Network. I knew him first when he was with the Boston Globe, wrote the greatest Sunday notes column anybody ever wrote. And he's in Marlins camp, and I think our listeners would like to know just what you've seen and your thoughts early in spring training on the Marlins.
Well, my first thought is, and I was here a couple days ago, how many more people are here covering the Marlins and watching them? And I wrote a story saying that in some ways they've become a destination, which is what this, you know, obviously that they want. But, I mean, you've got all the Ichiro followers, and Stanton's a huge story and a huge figure in the game. I mean, he's one of the top five players in the sport. And, you know, I think Jose Fernandez is a destination. I mean, who knows what he can do since he didn't have Tommy John surgery until May, and it's usually 18 months. But at the same time, I mean, he's got a chance to be a great pitcher. And, you know, they're really an interesting team. I think that the way Stanton went about the contract. First of all, Jeffrey Loria proved to people, you know, give me a reason and I'll spend the money. But the fact that Stanton wanted to structure the contract, not so he could say he's the highest paid guy, but so that the team could afford players, is incredible. I mean, I just love, when I was doing something with him in January, I said something about, you know, he was describing what went into his thought process on the contract. And I said, and so you're going to start spring training as the seventh highest paid player on the team. He loved that.
You know, you mentioned to me Stanton earlier, and you went out there and you saw him doing some things. I'm just curious, because his workout routine is really kind of unique.
Well, there were several parts of it. We met early in the morning over at UCLA where they go and hit, and A.J. Ramos doing flips to him. I actually texted a friend of mine in the organization, can't you at least send an intern? You don't get one of the best relievers in the National League killed, you know? But his practice discipline, hitting discipline, is amazing. And because every swing is geared to hitting a line drive slightly to the right side of the pitcher. So he's hitting the ball up the middle. He's never trying to get loft. And we talked about that when we were doing the interview. And I said, is this something you really care about? And he said, oh, absolutely. He said, I mean, I don't hit very many batting practice home runs. Once in a while, I'll hit one a long way. But, you know, it's all about the discipline of being able to stay in and hit line drive center, right center, and so forth. It reminds me so much in that discipline of Derek Jeter, because that he doesn't care about putting on a show. I was actually here when he was 19 years old and hit five balls up on the roof. Mark McGuire said, I never hit five balls on that roof in batting practice. So I was impressed by that. But and just his diet, his work routine. I mean, we went out and we had they had a trainer that was working with him and Ramos and Ricky Nolasco. And, I mean, they were running up this sand mountain that was just, I mean, it was painful to watch. And yet, you know, he's so disciplined in what he does, and a great influence on those other two guys. And right down to his diet. I mean, he's, you know, now his agent lined up a chef so they can always eat just the right things. And he's so aware of all the things that go into him in terms of health and what it takes to be great. And that's why I think, you know, I mean, I don't think we've seen how good he is. Of course, he's also done a lot to ensure that he won't pull hamstrings. He won't, you know, he's a freak. He gets hit by a pitch, that's a freak thing, or he run into a wall. But that whole thing of running that sand mountain was all about, it was all hamstring work. It's just, you know, I wanted to throw up watching it. So painful seeing it. But it's great that he has that discipline, and without the ego that goes into it, because he's, as you know, he's very private. And he's very much like Derek Jeter in that he knows that if he becomes a publicity hound, all it's going to do is get in the way of his routines. And I really respect him for that.
You know, it's interesting in baseball. People say, well, this guy's a leader and that guy. But a leader sometimes really doesn't have to say a whole lot in baseball. He leads by example.
I think so. I think there's no question. And just the fact that, the message was not the size of the contract, but could we have a good team? Could you pay out? Could you go out and get a Martin Prado? Could you go get a Mike Morse? Those things are very important. And I think that the message, players talk to me about, he cares so much about winning. I mean, he should be getting that money. That's the going rate for someone at 25 years old and with that ability. But at the same time, it's very clear, take care of these other guys. I mean, it's really important to me. We're going to have the best outfield in baseball, or the National League anyway. And also, what also impressed me is his feel for the city. I mean, I've never really sensed that there's a real feel for baseball in Miami. And to me, I mean, I asked him on camera, do you accept the responsibility of trying to make baseball really work in Miami? And he said, absolutely. And he said, I've told you many times, I want to play in Miami. I really like it. That's my choice. It's not my choice to go out to the West Coast. It's not my choice to play in New York. I love Miami. I want it to succeed. And I give Jeffrey Lurie a lot of credit for the money he put into it. I also give Giancarlo a lot of credit for accepting the responsibility of being Jeffrey's partner.
We're talking about the Marlins, and you mentioned Jeffrey going out and spending the money. Stanton had asked him to do that. The infield's pretty well remade. The only holdover is Adeniyi Echeverria at shortstop. Just your thoughts on the three infielders the Marlins picked up.
Well, I mean, first of all, Prado is one of the most respected guys in the game, and wherever he plays, people talk about him. We went over to the Yankees last year, Derek Jeter. Well, this is one of the really good things of the last 2 months of the year. I know he was very close to Jason Hayward when they were in Atlanta, and Brian McCann. He's a special guy. Morse is a really good guy. I mean, and was very popular in San Francisco. And I still think that there's so much left for improvement in D. Gordon. I mean, his second half wasn't quite as good as his on base, but also that could be a little bit deceiving. A, nobody wants to walk him because he's going to steal second, so they're going to throw him strikes. And secondly, when you've got that kind of speed, it's like with Billy Hamilton, the Reds people will say, he's got so much speed, the percentage of times he gets on base and can score make his on-base percentage very different. And D is the same way. He really cares. His father, I've known his father well for a long time. I also, the other day, his uncle was here. And his uncle was actually an Expos, or maybe it was one. No, it was Expos replacement player in 95. But a friend of mine, Tim Wilkin, who works for the Cubs, but he used to be the scouting director in Toronto, called me up and said, I just got the greatest card on a kid for the draft. The information card. He said, Tom Gordon's younger brother, his legal name is Little Anthony Gordon, because his mother loved Little Anthony the Imperials. And so he was over here, he yelled at me, oh, Little Anthony's here. And I always said, that's the greatest name in baseball history.
You've always worked music into it, and that's really a good one. Peter Gammon's our guest here, and spring training, a great time of year. Everybody optimistic. Just your thoughts on the National League East. Without going further, just what do you think?
Well, I think clearly Washington's the favorite. I mean, that starting rotation is ridiculous, and they're a very talented team. I mean, and it's the year they have to win because they lose about five guys, key players, to free agency at the end of the year. So, but I think they're clearly the favorite. But I think after that, I think that everything's kind of changed. I mean, the Phillies are beginning a rebuilding process. The Braves are in the middle of, they call it rebooting, but they're a long way from being serious contenders. So it's the Marlins and Mets. And I think I love the Mets pitching, and so much depends there. I mean, they could take so much heat about the shortstop. The shortstop will catch, Wilmer Flores will catch the ball. It's all about the Granderson and Wright bounce back. If they do with their pitching, they're going to be very good. And I think the Marlins are going to be well over 500. And, you know, it, depending on what they get out of Fernandez in the second half and how some of their other young pitchers progress, like if Henderson Alvarez really becomes a 200-inning, you know, really good pitcher, you know, where are they going to be? I think they're going to have a great bullpen. So, I mean, I think that even more than the Mets, the Marlins have a right to go into the season saying, you know, we have a shot at making the, at being one of the wild card teams. I mean, I think we're going to see the Dodgers win in the West. I think we're going to see maybe Pittsburgh and St. Louis in the Central. I think Pittsburgh's much better than people realize. But, I mean, and San Diego's going to be a threat just because they're pitching in that ballpark. But I think the Marlins have a really good chance to say if they win 87 games, they end up in, they can make the playoffs, which would be a great thing. It really, and a great statement for where they're coming. And I may be wrong. They may end up with Ozuna maybe to even take more strides. They may have a batting champion playing left field. I mean, who knows?
Well, it's interesting, too, and I really, last year, how important depth is pitching-wise, starting pitching. The Giants and the Royals, the two teams in the World Series, only used 8 starters all year. The Dodgers and the Cardinals used 12 starters. They made the playoffs. The Marlins had to reach and use 13, and nobody has that kind of depth. That just isn't there. You might be able to go 8 or 9 deep, but it's just too tough to go beyond that.
Absolutely, and I think it's really important today. I mean, guys get hurt. They're, and I think with the travel, I mean, how many times during the year do you have to play a night game on a getaway day? I mean, it's, you know, I mean, nobody seems to care about getting in at 6 o'clock in the morning, except that the exhaustion for players, I think, is more than ever. I think, watching Buck Showalter last year, I mean, we all thought they always had 40 players, because he was moving them back and forth to Norfolk, but he got whatever it was, 7 starters, and they all pitched a lot. He had, like, Gonzalez, he gave 10 days off to at one stretch. And I think it's that depth thing really plays. It's really hard to go into a season saying, we have 5 starters. I had 2 general managers say to me, yes, have you seen anybody like 6, 7 starters, long men, because that's what we're looking for, not the top-of-the-line guy. And now that's something you really do have to have, and it takes time to build it up. And again, you mentioned the Dodgers; they need that in a lot of ways. I mean, they're, because you can't really be sure what McCarthy and Anderson are going to do. So, you know, I know they're out there looking for a couple more starting pitchers somewhere, and it'll be interesting. And also, when you play in the heat that the Marlins play, I don't care if the games are at night, it's still draining.
Peter Gammons, our guest. Thanks for the visit, and we'll see you on the ball field.
Thanks, Boomer. I really appreciate it.